Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share some recent call for papers. I chat with Golda Paretsky about the upcoming Body Love Revolutionary Telesummit. And I spotlight a blog from Leslie Kinzel on what's wrong with fat shaming. Calls for papers have just been announced for two fat studies gatherings that are taking place this year in 2012. The first is for a conference being held in Wellington, New Zealand at Massey University. The conference is titled Fat Studies, Reflective Intersections. This conference is being organized by Dr. Kat Pause. That's me. And I'm excited to say that I've got Dr. Samantha Murray from Macquarie University as my keynote. Key areas of interest for abstract submissions include, but are certainly not limited to, intersections between fat studies and other academic disciplines, interdisciplinary work on fat, fat identity, and fat embodiment, fat activism as intersection, useful methodologies for intersectionality in fat studies teaching and research, theoretical frameworks related to fat studies intersectionality and interdisciplinary work, and critical reflections on intersectionality within fat studies. The abstract submission deadline is March 31st, and you can check out the website fs2012.massey.ac.nz for more information. The second call for papers comes from the Fat Studies Interest Group of the National Women's Studies Association. Their conference is being held on the 8th of November through the 11th in Oakland, California in the USA. Papers on any topic at the intersection of women's studies, feminism, womanism, gender, sexuality, and fat studies will be considered. At minimum, your submission should fall under one of the following themes for the National Women's Studies Association 2012 conference. The themes are revolutionary futures, traveling theory, social networks, power and change, decolonizing knowledge, and creative awakenings. February 13th is the submission deadline, and you can find more information online. Today is Golda Paretsky, a certified holistic health counselor who specializes in helping people get off the diet roller coaster and heal their relationship with food and their bodies. Golda, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
So I'm super excited because I know that starting this week is the brand new or second rollout of the Body Love Telesummit. So tell my listeners who don't know what that is, what it is.
Yes, I'm so excited about this. So yes, this is the second one we're doing. It's the Body Love Revolutionaries Telesummit, and we have basically what it is I wanted to get together lots of interesting people who are writing about, talking about, doing work in health at every size and fat acceptance, fat pride, and you know, I started just thinking about, I did it last year on a little bit of a smaller scale, and I started thinking about who would be exciting to talk to and interesting to talk to. There are so many people, and, you know, truthfully, some of the people that I excluded, I feel bad about excluding, and hopefully I'll get them in next year, bigger next year. but yeah, so we're going to be talking about a lot of different things. Basically, this is a telesummit where you can call in from anywhere in the world or Skype in. And we're going to be talking about lots of different topics. So we're talking about activism, health at every size, fashion, plus size clothing, fat sex, fat blogging, fat everything, fat fitness. We're talking about fat and queer intersections. And also fat politics and sort of history. And it's really interesting because we just got some amazing people. So, you know, some of the people I know have already been on your show, like Marilyn Wan, and she's one of the people starting it off on January 31st, New York time, which I guess is February 1st in Australia and New Zealand. But so she's going to be on along with Amanda Levitt, who founded Love Your Body Detroit, and Peggy Howell, who is the PR director for NAFA, and they're going to be talking about activism. So that's only the first call. Then we have amazing people. We have Linda Bacon, who wrote the book on health at every size. We have Reagan Chastain, who is in the documentary America the Beautiful 2, and she's a fat competitive dancer, an amazing blogger. I feel like if I mention people, I'm going to leave some people out, but there are so many great people. I mean, we have people talking about fat fitness, like Anna Gastelli, who is the founder of Curvy Yoga, you know, talking about how to be fit in a fat body and, like, how to really move in ways that feel good. We have some really interesting people talking about sort of fatness and queerness, including Charlotte Cooper, who is an amazing writer and blogger and, you know, who just writes, she writes for Obesity Time Bomb at Blogspot, which is great. And, you know, we have Paul Campos, who wrote the book, sometimes it's called The Diet Myth, sometimes it's called The Obesity Myth, and, you know, really studied sort of the politics behind the diet industry. And he's going to be on with us. I mean, there's so many fabulous people. And the great thing is I'm going to be interviewing them, and then we're going to have a sort of Q&A where people can call in and ask questions. And I'm also, we have a couple of options. There's you can have totally free access to the Telesummit. You can call in for free, and you can also get access to the recordings for about 24 hours after each call. And then I have an all-access pass. I did like a sliding scale of $20 to $50 U.S., and that gives you access to all the recordings through the end of March. And also 20% is being donated to NAFA and No Lose, so 10% to each. So it's just a really great opportunity to be part of this community, sort of the fat acceptance community, the health at every size community. Ask questions of people that maybe, you know, you read their books and you're curious about what they have to say or what they think about X, Y, Z, and just, you know, feel like you're part of this movement in a different sort of way.
So your guest list, or, you know, the list of people who are going to be part of this Telesummit, it honestly reads as like my wish list for people I'd love to get on my show. I mean, really, like you've got the best of the best. It's an amazing wide array of diversity. I think for me, I'm particularly fond of Paul Campos, largely because his book was actually my introduction to all of this. When I was working on my PhD, I stumbled across kind of his book, and it opened up a whole new kind of way of thinking and way of considering, you know, what we kind of are always told and always told to believe. So he was kind of what got me kind of into this. Do you have someone that you can identify as who brought you into the kind of fat liberation and health at every size movements?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. For me, probably my first entree into that world was Kate Harding and her blog.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And she's not doing that much sort of fat-related writing right now, so I didn't include her, but she was a big part for me. And also Marilyn Wan. Mm. I read Fat So, the book, pretty early on. And it was really life-changing. It really was. I just, you know, just even the visuals. I love the visuals that she includes in her book, you know, sort of at the beginning of every chapter where you have, you know, arms and, like, all different arms.
Yeah.
And all different tushies. I don't still say tushy. And all different whatever. And it's, like, it is really liberating. It's really this big thing to just see body diversity as opposed to this is good, this is bad. So she is definitely one, and Paul Campos for sure. Paul Campos I read pretty soon after that too, and I was really excited. I didn't know if he was gonna say yes, and I emailed him and called him, and he was actually the first person to get right back to me and say yes. So I was like, all right, this is gonna be a good telecoming. You know,
he's unbelievably approachable. I actually got the chance to meet him.
Oh.
2 years ago, the University of Otago, which is in Dunedin on the South Island of New Zealand, they held a big fat truth conference where they kind of had three obesity researchers and then three critical researchers, and Paul Campos and Michael Gard and Stephen Blair were like the three critical ones. And yeah, so I went to the conference and I was surprised and delighted by how approachable he was. You know, and he kind of found my my fangirl niche endearing, which I appreciated. He didn't find it annoying. So
that's great. Yeah, no, that's so great to hear. You know, and I should say too, I and I'm glad you pointed this out to me too. I actually realized not soon enough after putting this together that, you know, I hadn't included any Southern Hemisphere folks, and I realized that is something that I did neglect. And I really feel terrible about it because there are so many great people doing so much good work, including yourself, but I mean so many people. And so I hope that the next time I do this, if I can manage it, it's going to be even bigger and it's going to have lots of Southern Hemisphere folks. I'm glad, you know. But anyway, that's good to hear. About Paul Campos as well.
Well, and it's nice though, because they're, you know, like you're saying about, you know, just trying to pick, you know, you can only have so many people. You don't want it to get so large that it gets kind of out of hand, because it is, you know, it's a three-way phone call basically with a bunch of people listening in who are also able to kind of interject and ask questions. So, you know, hopefully, maybe in the next one when you do, you can pull one or two of us from the South in. We'd love to be included.
Absolutely. It's a big priority for me.
So if people who are listening want to register for the summit, how do they do that?
Just go to www, I'll say it and then I'll spell it, bodyloverevolution.com.
Okay.
So it's bodyloverevolution.com. And there are two choices there. I think I already said you could register for free or the sliding scale. So there's options there. You can register for one, you know, you can register for free and then decide you want to upgrade or whatever, no big deal. But as soon as you register, you'll get an email from me with information on how to call in or log in, and you're in, you know. So it's very easy. And I, you know, my feeling is the more the merrier. I really want as many people as possible to register. I know not everybody's going to make it live to the call, but I really, I want to also say that I welcome people who are new to fat acceptance, health at every size, et cetera, people who have been involved for years and years and years. That if you consider yourself sort of an ally, you know, that's okay too. You know, everyone is invited, and you know, welcome to participate.
Excellent. Well, Golda, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And I know I'm super excited about this second round of the summit, and I'm sure other people are as well. And thank you for all your work and for putting all of this together.
Thank you. Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you for having me on. It's been a lot of fun, and it flew by.
Well, we'll have to get you back afterwards, and you can tell us how it went.
Great. I would love that. I would love that.
All right. Thanks, Golda.
Okay, my pleasure. Bye.
In the spotlight today is a post called What's Wrong with Fat Shaming? This is written by the amazing Leslie Kinzel, and it was posted on XO Jane on January 26, 2012. Quote, in September of last year, a Georgia organization called Strong for Life launched a multimedia ad campaign aimed at drawing attention to childhood obesity. Setting aside for a moment whether childhood obesity is legitimately a crisis worthy of dramatic action, their approach was controversial. Strong for Life decided to use actual fat children as cautionary tales in their campaign, which consisted of billboards and print media, examples of which are shown above, and truly soul-wrenching YouTube videos. The campaign ran quietly for a few months before drawing some nationwide attention earlier this month. Some think that Strong for Love's tough approach, which shows the heartbreakingly sad faces of fat kids with ominous and erroneous captions like "chubby kids may not outlive their parents," is necessary to spur people into action. Opponents believe the campaign to be a horrifying exercise in the fat shaming of overweight and obese children, one that essentially reinforces the idea that fat kids should be singled out and made examples of. Curiously, in some cases, even people who otherwise agree with the idea that childhood obesity is a dangerous epidemic have stated that depicting these kids in miserable, stark, literally black and white tones is not the way to go about it. Body shaming is ubiquitous and abhorrent. It happens everywhere to pretty much everyone at one time or another. It is especially levied against women who are shamed for being skinny, for being tall, for being short, for having big boobs, for having small boobs, for having body hair, for being unfeminine, for being too sexy, for being too prudish, for being smart. Shamed at some point for being pretty much anything while also being female, including for being ugly and failing to serve a purpose as a beauty object, and for being pretty, which must mean they are vapid or dumb. Fat shaming is a specific variety of body shaming. It is not the only kind of shaming that takes place, but it is one of the more common ones. Lots of folk think fat shaming is perfectly acceptable. More than that, lots of folks think fat shaming is actually a good thing, because with shame as a motivator, perhaps those darn fat people will stop being so fat. It doesn't work, though. Shame is not a catalyst for change. It is a paralytic. Anyone who has ever carried extreme personal shame knows this. Shame doesn't make you grow stronger, nor does it help you to grow or to be healthy or to be sane. It keeps you in one place, very, very still. Fat shaming ought to be self-explanatory, but it's actually kind of tricky to define. Like most social stigma, the experience of fat shaming can differ dramatically from one individual to the next. I can only give you my take on it, which is hardly definitive, but it's all I've got. Here's a selection of the fat shaming I've experienced over the years. Number one, I'm at a grocery store selecting a carton of milk. An elderly woman stops me and instructs me to buy the slim milk and says I should put the butter in my cart back and get some kind of reduced fat fake butter spread instead and to try the egg beaters instead of real eggs. I don't like seeing young women looking so chubby, she explains helpfully. I lost 30 pounds last year on Weight Watchers. You should try it. I bet you could do even better. This woman has reminded me that because I am fat, the contents of my shopping cart, and anything I put into my mouth at that, are open to public scrutiny. Thinner people buying butter and eggs are not thought to be thinner than me because they eat these things, but I am thought to be fatter because I do. The implication is that I have not earned the right to buy and eat the foods I want, because my size demonstrates that I can't be trusted to consume them responsibly. For example, that I must be eating too much or eating wrong. Number two. I'm using the elliptical trainer at the gym. A man walks by and gives me an encouraging pat on the shoulder. Good for you, he says loudly, pointedly, and a little patronizingly. His intentions may well be positive, but in reality, he's drawn attention to the perceived discrepancy between my apparent interest in exercise and the size of my body. He has pointed out that seeing people who look like me exercising in public is a strange and unfamiliar occurrence, an idea rooted in the assumption that fat people are uniformly lazy and unhealthy, and I, as an exception, therefore deserve to be recognized and lauded. I feel singled out and othered, and very, very uncomfortable. Number three, I'm seeing a new doctor who immediately tells me that I should be eating a healthier diet and getting more exercise, and that I need to watch my sugar intake because I am probably pre-diabetic. I tell the doctor, I'm a vegetarian and I swim at least 2 miles 4 days a week, and my fasting blood sugar results have always been excellent. The doctor looks me up and down and gives me an unvarnished look of extreme skepticism. Why? Because I am fat and because she is unwilling to even entertain the possibility that I might eat a balanced diet and keep active. Because she has already decided what my habits are based on exclusively on having looked at my body, no matter what I may tell her about my life, and evidently no matter what my actual test results say. Number four, I am out dancing at a club with friends. I notice a small group of guys at the bar staring at us and laughing. Eventually, one of them comes over and starts trying to dance behind me, rubbing against my ass while his friends laugh. When I turn around and tell him to back off, he laughs in my face and says, "Nah, girl, I'd totally fuck you if I could thought I could find your pussy and all that blubber." These dudes have collaborated to make me feel shamed and unwelcome, and to remind me that it is not okay for fat chicks to dance in a club, because dancing's only conceivable point is to attract men, and obviously the idea that a fatty like me might attract a man is positively laughable. Number five. I am walking briskly to my car in stormy weather. A gust of wind blows my skirt up in the back, and I try to bat it back down again. Three teenage girls standing outside a nearby apartment building make horrified noises. "Damn, bitch, nobody wants to see your cheesy thighs," one of them yells, and they all laugh. Apparently, going anywhere in public looking the way I do is unacceptable. These are some overt examples, but fat shaming can also take more subtle forms, like gently suggesting that a fatty should skip dessert, or that maybe she would feel more comfortable in pants instead of a form-fitting dress. The frequency with which fat shaming happens means many fat people go about their lives for years feeling constantly on guard, always prepared for someone to make a comment, to call them out. It doesn't have to come from strangers either. Often our families and friends are just as likely to throw out careless fat-shaming comments, and not always with malicious intent. The trouble with fat-shaming is that it is such an intrinsic part of our culture, it can be difficult to recognize. I'm sure that guy at the gym thought he was offering encouragement. I don't doubt the lady in the grocery store was trying to give me friendly advice. But their intentions do not erase the shaming effects of their unwanted commentary on my body. If we want to stand in opposition to fat-shaming, we only need to remember a few points. You can't tell how healthy someone is just by looking at them. You can't tell how much someone eats or exercises just by looking at them. And even if you could, it's none of your business anyway. To paraphrase Marilyn Wan, the only thing you can tell for sure by looking at a fat person is the degree of your own bias against fat people. Removing shame from one social stigma, fatness, does not translate to replacing it onto a non-stigmatized lifestyle, like wanting to be thinner. A stance against fat shaming is not a matter of trying to make anyone feel bad for enjoying exercise, being vegan, wanting to lose weight. After all, there are lots of fat people who enjoy exercise immensely. There are lots of fat people who are vegan. There are fat people who do all kinds of things because fat people exist in a dizzying variety of perspectives, experiences, and lifestyles, just like non-fat people. It's even possible to want to lose weight and take action towards that end while still not shaming fat people or making offensive or hurtful comments about them or to them. It can be done. All it takes is that the person trying to lose weight owns their decisions about their bodies at the same time that they respect and validate the rights of other people to do what they like with their bodies, even if some of those people don't want to diet, and even if some of those people look like, well, like me. I choose not to diet, not to try to lose weight, for lots of reasons. Given my long history of weight loss and gain via dieting beginning when I was 9 years old, my body's dramatic response to starvation, and really, that's what a diet is, makes it impossible for me to lose weight and still have a life that is at all worth living. My priorities are different, and I've decided that the course best for me is to let my body hang out at the weight it overwhelmingly seems to prefer. Even for those who manage to beat the odds and maintain a significant weight loss long term, the price is constant vigilance, and I can't live with that degree of food obsession and also be at all mentally stable. You may not understand this. That's cool. We don't have to fully get each other. We just need to mutually expect one another. I simply think it's important that you know that you don't have to diet no matter your size. You can choose not to if you want. Standing against fat shaming ensures that everyone gets to make private decisions about the state of their body and that everyone gets to have those decisions respected, whether they decide to lose weight or to be contentedly fat or to dye their hair or get lots of piercings or tattoos. Other people's bodies are none of your business, not to judge, not to touch, or to publicly comment upon. The Georgia Childhood Obesity Campaign is a troubling example because it turns fat kids into victims responsible for their own stigma. It holds them up as dark, bleak caricatures whose entire existence is defined by their fatness. But those kids laugh sometimes. They play with their friends. Some of them probably like sports, and some probably prefer carrot sticks to french fries. Some don't. The world is a diverse place. Unfortunately, by relying on shame, campaigns like Strong for Life erase all the positivity in these kids' lives. Energy that might be spent encouraging them to get excited about being strong and growing up and learning things and being the best people they can be. It deters them from feeling good about themselves and feeling good in their own skin at whatever size they wind up. The ability to value ourselves no matter what we look like is far more useful than broadening our capacity to be shamed. That's my opinion as an unrepentant fatty, by the way, but you come to your own conclusions. Just don't shame me for mine. Unquote. Closing the show is Gossip with Spare Me From the Mold.